Well, I put in the bulletin a little bit of a preview so as to give you an idea of what we'd be talking about tonight, since it's an interesting title, gardening. So not actual gardening, but playing with this idea of, I wanted to have a practical lesson this evening that can encourage us to be bold and to be unafraid to have more spiritual conversations in our lives, especially particularly with those who may not agree with us. Because in our culture, we aren't very good at having disagreements. Really, civil discourse, what is that? We don't know what civil means when it comes to discourse and disagreeing with others. And so tonight, I want to share with you some thoughts that are motivated by a few things. First off, this is where some of the central ideas come from. Greg, I've said Kukul for years, and I've been wrong for years. It's Kukul. I learned that about a year ago. Greg Kukul, I wrote this book called Tactics, and I've used it in my evidences class before, and I almost took it out of the class, but in the course of vows, I always ask, what books did you like? And I just thought maybe it wasn't well received, and instead it was a highlight of the class, because I find that students, they feel like, okay, I have some knowledge, now how do I go about sharing that knowledge? How do I share and communicate with others? And just recently, just a few months ago, he came out with an updated book that is similar. It's got a lot of overlap, called Street Smarts. So if you are a little bit on the older side, you might like the first book, Tactics, because a big part of that, he uses the idea of Columbo from the TV show. All right, and so that's one thing that, like, I'm old enough that I remember Columbo. I wasn't born when it was on TV. So, you know, you get to, like, 20-year-olds, and they're just like, who's this? And so I showed them a little video. So anyways, that was my biggest complaint about the book, is thought it's dated a little bit. But Street Smarts is updated, and it has a lot of examples of different kind of how to engage in dialogue. And so not only because this new version had come out, so I just finished it a couple weeks ago, but I was having a conversation with my father, and we were talking about those times when you have difficult conversations with people and how to navigate those. Sometimes the person may not be difficult at all, but it's still a difficult conversation, or maybe you're dealing with a difficult person. And so we were just talking about this, and I thought, this is something I want to share this evening to think about encouraging us to not be afraid. And one of the things that Kukul starts out his book with, he encourages us to think about gardening. What he means by that is he encourages us to each do a little bit of gardening. He says, before any harvest, there's also a season of gardening. Again, fear of not knowing enough, or maybe fear of offending, keeps us from stepping out and engaging in these conversations, even though we have this desire. So what I often share with students, I say, what if we took the pressure off ourselves and didn't feel like we had to know everything, and we didn't feel like we have to move somebody from A to Z? But what if somebody is at A, and I do a little something to nudge them to B? Or maybe they're at D, and we move them to F, right? Just do a little bit of work, a little gardening, a little tilling of the ground. And if we are all doing that, think about that cumulative effect. If as Christians we are unafraid to engage in spiritual conversations, to have that confidence, like we talked about, that encouragement that Paul gave Timothy. Think of the way that could, like yeast causes dough to rise. You need it in that. You work it in to these conversations. And if we all did that more, there would be a positive effect. A couple of verses, as was just read in John chapter 4. This idea here that lift up your eyes, right? The fields are white already. But this is the one I want to notice, verse 36. Already the one who reaps is receiving wages and gathering fruit for eternal life, so that sower and reaper may rejoice together. So one of the things that Kukul says is we don't all have to be closers. What he means by that is that we enter into somebody else's labor. And so again, we're all working together to be that salt and that light. For here the saying holds true, one sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that for which you did not labor. Others have labored and you have entered into their labor. And so tonight, as we think about how can we labor together, all do a little bit of gardening, and to step out and to be more bold in our faith. Now, what's interesting, as I was reflecting on this and looking over this, thinking about where this passage falls, In John chapter 4, you know what this surrounds? His encounter with a Samaritan woman at the well. And then she's run off to tell her friends, right? And then the disciples are like, does somebody have food? He's like, I've got food. And there's a little confusion there. He's got a greater lesson in mind. And she goes and tells all her friends. As he's going from Judea to Galilee, he's passing through Samaria. See, sometimes we might think, well, I don't know if it'll do any good, or like maybe this person is, you know, these folks are so like opposed to what I have to say, then they won't even hear me in the first place. But yeah, think about this conversation that Jesus is having with his disciples in the middle of a conversation he's just had with the Samaritan woman. Paul, when he's talking to the Corinthians, now this is in the context of there being some divide and discord, right, among the brethren there. But nevertheless, the point still stands and applies here. It says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. So again, our responsibility is to sow seed, to scatter seed, to step out, to have these conversations. Some may go not so great. Some you may be surprised. But the point is that here, it doesn't matter who does what. We're all working together. The important thing is God who gives the growth. Again, the practical advice and wisdom shared in Colossians, walk in wisdom toward outsiders, making the best use of the time. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. And so this is one of the things that can be scary to step out because you don't know what the other person's going to say. But let me offer you this encouragement. As you start to engage in more of these conversations and get the practice of it, you'll find that you're most likely not going to be encountering like the super hardcore PhD atheist on the street every day, okay? But instead, people who maybe looking and searching, people that may be skeptical, people that may have been hurt in the past. There's all sorts of variety. But one of the things that you start to notice is that some of the same kind of objections will come up over and over, just kind of in a slightly different way. And so there's a way in which you can gain more confidence to know, okay, anticipate some of these things that will come up. And I'm going to share a little bit more advice here in just a second. As we think about this, whether it's in apologetics, Christian evidences, whether it's in conversation, we're not interested in having a frontal assault, in being aggressive and abrasive and steamrolling and I'm winning this argument, because you can win an argument and lose the person, and what have you accomplished? So instead, there's a better way. There's a better way to be reasonable and thoughtful, not merely emotional, right? There's a lot, emotions are big in our culture. And as we're reminded here, as Jesus is sending out the apostles, he tells them, behold, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. So we need to be clever. We need to be thoughtful and crafty in a good kind of way, because we're going to encounter all sorts of different varieties out there. So be wise as serpents, innocent as doves. Now, this is a verse that I've referenced many times because it's one of my favorites, and that reminder of, I just love the metaphor, that we are ambassadors for Christ. We are imploring on that on God's behalf. So as we think about this, Kogel says, look, there are three skills that we need to have. First off, we do need to have knowledge. And guess what? Yeah, you're always going to feel inadequate, that you could always know more. Absolutely. The more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. But are you a Christian? You know the gospel, and you can share that. So beginning about having knowledge, having wisdom in how we maneuver in conversations to again, be practiced in being able to have discourse, civil discourse with someone else, and also that character, having character in how we respond and engage in these conversations. And that knowledge and those maneuvers are embodied in a person, in our character, and how we convey to others. So what I want us to do for just a second is let's turn over to 2 Timothy. Let me think about Paul's advice to Timothy. There's a lot of good stuff here, but let's just look at a few verses. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 14, as he's talking about what to remind these folks and a worker approved by God, remind them of these things and charge them before God, not to quarrel about words, which does no good, but only ruins the hearers. Do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who has no need to be ashamed, rightly handling the word of truth. You flip over a little later in the chapter. We see in verse 23, have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. You know that they breed quarrels. And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth, and they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will. Again, we can see that the knowledge here, the wisdom being shared, is there is a place and time of knowing when to speak and how to speak. And so it's not about we could say, oh, well, I'm not to quarrel about words, so I'm just not going to engage. Well, no, it's knowing when to stand up and to speak and how to go about it. Of course, yeah, have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. But we're told to be kind to everyone, again, able to teach, patiently enduring, correcting with gentleness. Those are the character traits that we need to embody. And we're told in chapter 3, but understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness by denying its power. Avoid such people. Does this sound familiar? Lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, having the appearance of godliness. You know, I think about words that we may hear in our culture. Love, tolerance, diversity, inclusion. Guess what? Those are good things. Those are good words. Our culture has taken them and distorted them into something else, right? These things here that we're told, we're going to encounter this. But then at the same time, to chapter 4, I charge you in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who is to judge the living and the dead, and by his appearing in his kingdom, preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Reprove, rebuke, and exhort with complete patience and teaching. For the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander off into myths. As for you, always be sober-minded, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. Do you ever get discouraged when you see some of the things that happen around us? And the times we find ourselves, while we may be discouraged, take heart. These are things that are not surprising. And we've been warned of it long ago, that we're still in a battle and we're still striving in a world that is broken and sinful. You know, this thought just occurred to me as I was reading this, and we may have talked about it before, but it's just that reminder of like Daniel or Esther or Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, these folks who they weren't going out picking fights with people. That wasn't their point. But they were faithful. And in the process, they're going to encounter conflict. And so as we read these words, this encouragement of knowing when to speak, how to speak, not every battle is worth having, but how can we make the best use of our time and our influence and our words? So, we've looked at some advice from Scripture. Now I want to turn to some practical application. When I read the Tactics book years ago, one of the things that stuck with me I don't know if it's original to him. That's where I heard it first, right? A pebble in the shoe. He says, all I'm trying to do is leave a pebble in their shoe. And that's his point, like what I was talking about earlier. Instead of trying to move somebody from A to Z, what if we get them from A to B? What if we leave them with a thought? You know, if you've had a rock in your shoe where you're like, ha, man, what is that? It's this little thing, and just it bugs you until you finally go, what is in here, right? And so what we're doing is to leave something with somebody that they might go, I never thought of that. Now, they may not say that in the conversation, but they may go away and reflect on something you said, and guess what? Somebody else may come along and do a little gardening, and maybe leave another pebble. And so as we think about this, he says it's important, and I think this is anyway, we talk about conveying the gospel and whether you're doing apologetics, whether you're out on the mission field, is starting where someone is at, starting where they are. Start within their framework. Try to step inside of that to find something to connect, to point them out towards Jesus. And Kogel says, you know, in many situations, the fruit is not ripe. The non-believer is simply not ready. They may have just begun to consider Christianity. And maybe dropping a message on them that is, from their point of view, meaningless or simply unbelievable or seemingly absurd doesn't really accomplish what you would hope in the moment. And that they might simply reject, you know, talk about ruin the hearers. But we want folks to respond in a way that is going to endure. That's why, you know, when studying with people, I don't apply pressure because this is something I want to endure. I don't want to make some sort of strong emotional appeal that's merely emotional, and then when the emotion subsides, it's back to square one. And so as we think about this, let's talk about some practical advice. All right, that awkward moment. Have you ever had that awkward moment? I don't know. Maybe you can think of something that comes to mind. Let me just give like an example. Let's say if you're sitting around a small group Bible study and you invite a friend who doesn't really know the Bible, but they're coming, right? And so you're around with all your circle of friends, and maybe the person says, yeah, but all religions are the same anyways. And like, maybe like looking around, okay, because you want to speak up, but you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to step into this. I don't want to rock the boat, right? Or maybe, you know, it's Thanksgiving around the table with extended family or something, right? And let's say that, you know, you have a family that majority are Christians, and one of the cousins is like, well, love is love. You should be able to marry whoever you want to marry, right? Okay, we're going to have this conversation at the dinner table, right? And so here's the thing. He says, in these awkward moments, you have like a 10-second window of what to do. And one of the things, the advice that he gives, is he says, ask a question. Ask a question. Because there's a way that you can speak up that gives you some more time and invites the other person into some dialogue. So here's three steps, he says. The first thing he says, here's the first question to ask. What do you mean by that? Now, he says there's several things. First off, if you're not sure what's going to happen, or, you know, if you're in your mind, right? Have you ever had a conversation where you're like, I don't know what's going to be said next. Lord, be with me, be with me, be with me, right? You go, okay, what do you mean by this? I've said this before, a little side note. See, the beauty of going into philosophy, right, in grad school, I can be there and have no clue what's happening in class, right? And they'll be like, what do you think? And I'll be like, I'll have to think about that some more. What do you mean by that? You see, this is a way in which we want to gather information because we want to start where somebody is. We want to understand what it is that they have to say. To have these conversations, we need to start realizing we need to do a whole lot more listening than speaking. Because we need to listen, 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 so that we can have the right words, the most effective words to say. So he says, look, this is a great first question. What do you mean by that? Because it gives you time to gather information. You don't want to misunderstand the person. You don't want to misrepresent the person either. And also, it causes the person to reflect on their own statements. Because one of the things is that when we get into maybe heated conversations, we start throwing like bumper sticker slogans at each other. And that's how we go back and forth, right? You know, well, love is love. Well, God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. Like, what good does that do? Like, instead, let's slow down and say, tell me what you mean by that. Or somebody says, well, who are you to say? Instead of like, well, how about, okay, I gather that you disagree with me and you think I've gone wrong somewhere. Could you help me maybe understand where you think I've gone wrong? Or what if you're called a name, right? That's one of the things that we have modeled for us a lot in our culture, right? You just, if instead of engaging another person or their argument, instead you just call them a name, right? And so maybe, well, you're just bigoted, or you're just homophobic, as if that is aha, I have made the next proper move. Instead you say, what do you mean by that? You see, it stops the person in their tracks to reflect a little bit on what they have to say. As we think about what do you mean by that, first you're going to clarify what's on the table. What are you talking about? The second question he says, to follow up, is what makes you think that? And again, it isn't in a tone of what makes you think that, or whatever, however you want to say it. But what you're asking for, essentially, if you don't say these exact words, what you're doing is, okay, you've shared this. Let me understand the reasons that you have for this. There's this idea of burden of proof. If somebody makes the claim, some sort of controversial claim, then let them defend it. Let them give their reasons. When we role play, we'll do this and we'll role play in class a lot, and it's just our natural inclination. We want to jump in and like respond to something. But instead, if we just sit back and say, wait, you've made this claim, let's let you do a little bit of work. Right? For example, somebody says, well, you know, everybody must have just been hallucinating Jesus because bodies don't rise from the dead. Now, if you've done some of your stuff on the resurrection, you could debunk that. Or you can say, well, tell me what makes you think that, right? What are your reasons? Because it's essentially like this, the analogy of a house. You're building a house. And it's like a roof, right, is supported by walls. And if somebody lays a roof at your feet in a bumper sticker slogan, love is love, like they've done their job, this reason will say, wait, first off, what do you mean by that? And what got you to this conclusion? What are your reasons? Because those reasons become the point of discussion. That becomes the things to engage in. I want to understand what is leading the person to make this claim. And then we ask things like, okay, is it possible? Is it plausible? Is it probable? I can think of, you know, it's very rare, you know, to have maybe somebody like in a student in class that's like disrespectful or challenging. And this student wasn't even necessarily being disrespectful, just I knew they always had this kind of bone to pick, right? And it might be like, and they were like, well, isn't it possible? And I knew where it was going. And so I just kindly said, well, yes, that's possible. That is a logical possibility. But what makes you think that that's likely or probable or plausible, you see? We're engaging in the reasons to try to move somewhere, to move forward. And let's say we don't come to any sort of agreement. If me and the person I'm talking with, if we understand each other a little bit better, it's progress. Final thing is to say, it's important to make the distinction between giving an explanation and giving evidence why an explanation is a good one, right? You know what I mean by this? The student says, I wasn't here, I was sick. Okay, you've got an explanation, right? Now, what about evidence for a good one? Oh, here's my doctor's note, right? And so a lot of times what we have is that oftentimes, like I said, you aren't going to have somebody who is just like an expert on this topic, but instead we hear these things, we read these posts on Facebook, and then we just echo them. And we have confirmation bias, which means we tend to already affirm what we already believe. And so instead, this slows down. What do you mean by that? And what makes you think that? The third step, he says, is to use questions to make a point. Now, this is the part where it takes some savvy, because what you want to do is you want to find ways to ask questions, but you kind of have to know where you want to go in your mind. And so it's kind of like you're shooting that arrow with that question because you want to steer the conversation this way. See, this is a way in which you can start to steer conversations into spiritual directions without having to be like in the driver's seat, but kind of passively, not passive aggressively, but passively, right? Passively kind of guiding. So it was a little over a year and a half ago. I was flying home from a conference and sat down, and yes, I'm one of those people that's going to talk to a person next to them on the airplane. And then, and this person was too, and he was like, "Oh, where have you been?" And so I was at a conference. It's a conference for Christian philosophers. And he was like, "Oh, I'm agnostic." And I was like, "Oh." And then I was like, "Okay, the proof is in the pudding, because I'm literally going back like tomorrow to talk about some of this stuff in class." But instead, I wanted to be like, got back and was like, "Guys, I sat next to agnostic on the airplane on the way home," right? But what we did is we talked about that, and I had Donnie DeBoard, by the way, sitting next to me there. And then at the end of the flight, he was like, "You did pretty good." I was like, "All right, I got the Donnie stamp of approval." But you know what was interesting? Is I asked a lot of questions and learned about him. And, you know, one of the things is his parents were atheists. But you know what it was that he said? One of the people that made the biggest impact on him was a coach who was a Christian. And he saw that real Christian faith lived out. And he even said, I didn't even have to say it. He even said, and I realized that there are a lot of Christians that basically, you know, like everybody's hypocrites. He goes, I realize that there's a lot of flaws in that way, but when you see it lived out, you see how there had been some gardening already taking place. And so I thought in my mind, okay, well, what direction can we take this a little bit? And I don't want to, you know, beat it into the ground and where I dominate for 2 hours, because if it doesn't go well in the first 5 minutes, you still got an hour and 55 minutes left sitting next to each other on the plane, right? But there's a little bit of that moment where inside you go, "Ooh." But if we start to step out, it's just like learning to walk. Sometimes you'll fall flat on your face. Sometimes you'll scuff up your knee. But you know what? After enough, you just might start to take a few steps. And you might walk. And you can even run. And so these things are, I just want to encourage us to not be afraid to step out and to do these things. Okay, just a couple more things. I want to go to one more passage, Luke chapter 7. There are so many examples that we could go to, especially of Jesus. But in Luke chapter 7, I like this of sometimes like setting a question, using a question. Like Jesus is in... is, you know, it's kind of with a, oftentimes with the audience that wants to entrap him. And so in Luke chapter 7, verse 36, he's at a Pharisee's house for dinner. One of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him, and he went into the Pharisee's house and reclined at table. And behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclining at table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head and kissed his feet and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner." Notice Jesus, what Jesus does here. He's, as Coke would say, something like setting the table, right? And Jesus answered, said to him, "Simon, I have something to ask you, or something to say to you." And he answered, "Say it, teacher." A certain money lender had two debtors, one owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now which of them will love him more? And Simon answered, "The one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt." And he said to him, "You have judged rightly." Right? He set this up, totally different circumstance. And this guy sees the reasoning here. It's clear to him. And so Jesus says, turning toward the woman, he said, "Do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little loves little." And he said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." Then those who were at table with him began to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" And he said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Just one small little snippet there. But I hope that what this does tonight is maybe encourages you, maybe prompts you to think about, maybe I do step out, and how can I improve that? or maybe I've been kind of shy or timid too, but I'm going to start trying. I'm going to take that first step. And so this is some practical advice of, the Columbo tactic, which is called here. What do you mean by that? You want to gather the information. You want to hear the person out. Because guess what? I want to find out, where's my in with this person? Where's the point of agreements that we have? Where's the area of disagreement? So in my mind, I can start to think about, how can I encourage this person? How can I maybe leave a pebble in their shoe? And then asking, well, what makes you think that? Because you want to understand the reasons behind it. And so what you're doing is you're engaging in a conversation, and guess what? If you get in like where you feel like you're over your head, guess what? You don't even have to be in persuasion mode. Maybe just be in information gathering mode. And maybe this is a stranger that you'll never see again, but you'll learn something in the process. Or maybe it is a person you have a relationship with and you go, I need to do some more work. I need to think about this some more. Just gather information. They made this claim or this conversation, so let's take something away from it. And then use questions to guide the conversation or to make a point. There's so much more that could be said, but I hope that this is, again, something to think about to in the new year to continue to strive to be more bold, because the world needs to hear the good news. And as you think about this, the question, how did I do? After you have an encounter, did I have the knowledge I needed? Maybe I'm like, I'm going to go like brush up on this, right? Because I didn't know anything about this. I'm about to teach contemporary concerns. And so, I do a class session. We're going to talk about this thing. You may have never heard of, actually understood what queer theory is. We're going to look at that because somebody that may be coming from this position, right? We need to have some more knowledge, whether it's where the other person's coming from, whether it's to beef up our biblical knowledge. And did I display wisdom in my method? All right, how could I have maneuvered that better? How could I have handled that situation better? And then did I display character? And if you leave a conversation, you're like, you got angry or whatever, guess what? This is really common to do. And the thing is, if we start to do these things, we learn to have better self-control, to not let those things rile us up, and so we can keep a cool, calm head and be speaking with gentleness, season our speech. And again, we have plenty of opportunity to anticipate, to reflect, to practice. You know what? I like to listen to a lot of people that I disagree with. Because what that does is I'm trying to understand, how are they coming from this? Because I disagree with them. I don't understand it. But I want to try to understand, so that why? With the goal of, how can I better connect to them to point them to Jesus? Again, we're reminded that we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. If you're sitting in here this evening and you're like, I don't know about this whole Christianity thing, let's have a conversation. Let's explore it together. Let's look to God's word. If you're somebody who wants to be an ambassador for Christ, you want to be a son of God, a daughter of God, you want to put Christ on to begin that walk, we can do that too. Or maybe you've not been a good ambassador. Maybe you want to recommit in that way, whether it's publicly, whether it's privately in the pew, whether it's with your friends after to encourage each other. We serve a gracious and loving God. And you know, just think about, I know I said I was going to stop, but just think about, like, go and, like, when you read the Bible, the people that God uses, sometimes we hold them up as like, oh, these models. They were just like you and me. And they had their things that they did well and the things that they did not do so well. And so how can God use you and me, just little jars of clay with cracks and scuffs and all, so that his glory and his power can shine through? If you have any need, come forward while we stand and sing.